Another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, part two, breaking down the Nets' exit interviews, particularly the ones yesterday with head coach Kenny Atkinson and general manager Sean Marks. And then we are going to get into some quick thoughts on the NBA playoffs and maybe even a new segment reviewing a certain famous reality troupe in the Nets' old home. All that and more next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back in to the Locked On Nets podcast. You are listening to Locked On Nets, you know, because I just told you, and you heard it in the intro, and you heard it in the musical promo, but it's your team every day, so that's exciting. Even though we don't really stick to that, but you get it. You get us a good amount. I think you have enough of us. Anyways, your team every day. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to cover the Brooklyn Nets. When this episode is released, our boy Josh will be back safely in his hometown of Savannah, Georgia. His adopted hometown in the last 2 weeks. They love him there. If you're a Nets fan in Savannah, Georgia, hit Josh up. And
they call me SVO, Savannah's very own.
Yeah, that's true. Wow, that's great. That's a Tinder bio while you're there. Anyways, yeah, maybe buy him a beer. Maybe he'll buy you a beer. I don't know how this stuff works, but I think you'd have a great time with Josh in Savannah, Georgia. All right, Josh. Oh, really? Wow. Okay, so you could have a nice beer and walk with Josh Bash, your favorite Locked On Nets host. All right, Josh. Now that I've whored you out, you want to get back into these exit day quotes? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I
figured out beforehand, so I can't really back out.
Yeah. For anyone not, obviously you're not watching these, this is a podcast, but I am holding up cue cards, and there is someone holding a water gun to Josh's head. So he had to agree to it.
All right. Not a snitch.
Yeah. All right. So Sean Marks, this is the final one of his remarks we're going to go through, and then we're going to get into, Kenny Atkinson a little bit. He made the point that the Nets, and I know for you and me, and like me in particular, like I really harped on this. Like I thought the biggest need going to offseason was clearly getting like another big, like someone who could rebound, someone who could kind of hold their own inside, even if that's maybe like a little bit of an antiquated view of the NBA. As Sean Marks said, he's looking for 1 through 5s. And Josh, I think in part one, you made a good point on this, literally just 10 minutes ago in real time. The Nets should just be looking for talent wherever they can get it. But do you think there should be more weight on bigs and I guess wings, just because it seems like they can't feasibly add another point guard without getting rid of someone?
Yeah, wings would probably be where I would look to. I don't know, because it's not that the Nets have depth at every position. They just need like top level players, and I know we stress on this enough, but I think like the solution's pretty obvious. Or not the solution, like what they need is pretty obvious. It's hard to get there obviously, because like those players are in demand throughout the league. But yeah, if they can add some more wings, that'd be great. And I feel like these guys are always people you can find in the second round of the draft, and they just go way too late. Semi Ojeleye in this past draft. Also, Josh Hart was drafted number 30. So kind of identifying those guys in this year's draft, because obviously the Nets don't have any top little picks. So if they can get a couple of rotation players at the wing, guys who can be plug and play under the radar steals, that would be really nice in terms of adding value, because the Nets have had a lot of injuries the last few years, and you can never have enough wings, because those guys can really just fill in and play 2 through 4 and really give you an added element of your game.
Yeah, and obviously, like, the dream for the Nets is you keep making smart signings, you keep drafting really well, and eventually, like what the Suns have been doing for years, what the Celtics, with the help of the Nets, have been doing for years, you accumulate enough assets that if and when a superstar becomes available, and it doesn't really happen that often, I don't know if I count Boogie Cousins, like, to me, like, the last, like, truly, like, generational player to get traded like that was James Harden. Like, you want to be in position to trade for someone like that, or even someone a tier below that, but it could take...
Kyrie?
Kyrie's a great example. Like, someone like that, you need to have a certain amount of assets, and I think the Nets are moving in a direction with guys like Jared Allen and Caris LeVert. I mean, who right now you would say, I never want to get those guys up. But theoretically, like last year, if Kyrie was on the table and like something like Jared Allen and Spencer Dinwiddie and like 2 first-round picks was the price, you would have wanted to do it. So it's interesting to see the Nets continue to go in that direction. And to me, like we talk about like, well, what's the avenue for them to get a superstar? They're not going to tank. How are they going to do it? And guys don't necessarily want to come here in free agency, like, no matter how good the culture is, at least right now, or until the Nets show a little bit more promise, that might be the way to do it. So to me, I like that comment from Sean Marks. You want to get talent wherever, whenever, however, and that'll eventually lead to more talent. Okay. Yeah,
it's like the Shakira song, Whenever, Wherever.
Wow, that was a great reference.
People.
Yeah. All right, some Kenny Atkinson quotes now. He noted that players like D'Angelo Russell, Alan Crabb, probably DeMar Carroll was in there too, haven't had an opportunity to go through a full offseason with the Nets yet, and he thinks that's going to make a big difference for those guys. And I think that's a fascinating point, and maybe one we kind of underestimated when Alan Crabb in particular got off to a slow start to the year, and D'Angelo Russell obviously had a slightly disappointing season relative to the expectations that we set for him. I think it might be fairer to judge these guys after a full offseason with the Nets. And if nothing else, this administration has shown that they have a track record of genuinely making guys better at the weakest parts of their game year after year after year. So I'm interested to see maybe what D'Angelo can do on defense, or if Crabbe's a little bit more consistent shooting or off the dribble. Like, I'm intrigued what skills these guys will add.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely important to get offseason in with the coaching staff and have that familiarity, but at the same time, a player like Victor Oladipo, for instance, he was traded around the same time that, I guess, D'Angelo Russell and Alan Crabbe were, and he had such a great offseason that it really propelled him to just becoming an absolute star this year. So I think it's a little bit overblown. Alan Crabbe, obviously he had the ankle surgery last year, and he was pretty banged up the entire offseason, so he couldn't really work out, and I think that could be something that affected him. But I it's enough with these excuses. I mean, you have a whole season to kind of work out kinks in your game and improve, and if you don't do it, I'm not gonna make an excuse saying that you need a full offseason. I mean, if they end up having this offseason and become much better next year, that's great, but at the same time, you have to have accountability. You can't just have the first year that you're with the team just be a wash year just because for whatever reason.
No, I mean, and that's reasonable, but I mean I think it's obvious that, I mean, like, the variable we're talking about there is the effort these guys put in, and it's clear that Atkinson and his entire staff and Sean Marks' entire staff is able to draw that effort out of guys. I think it's pretty undeniable that, like, I mean, guys up and down the roster added skill sets. Like, obviously, Hollis Jefferson completely changed who he was as an offensive player this year. Joe Harris leapt, like, four levels up from where he was the season before. Spencer Dinwiddie became a lot more consistent than he ever was. So it's clear, like, it does have an impact. And I get what you're saying. Like, it should be on guys themselves, and these guys should take an incredible amount of pride in being better and doing it on their own. But it's obvious that, like, whether, like, you want to get upset about that or not, like, the Nets are able to draw that out of guys. So I think that potentially bodes well for Russell and Crabbe. And I think it'll be telling if those two guys don't make leaps next season.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't make leaps next season, then what are we doing? Because D'Lo, like, oh, let me ask you this. Because
yeah, sure.
He's going to be a restricted free agent after next season. Would you even consider giving him an extension before that? I guess it's the Halloween deadline, or it's a wait and see type deal.
I mean, obviously, like, I mean, the variable there is, like, I've no idea how he's going to play to start next season. If he shows marked improvement from this year, yeah. And then I guess the other thing,
like, five games. Let's say he plays five games and does well. He's averaging like 18 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, like better percentages across the board.
Yeah, well, I mean, then the other variable there is, like, I mean, like, what kind of money are you giving him? Like, would I extend him at the max? Like, no, because I don't think any team is going to offer him that this offseason, or next offseason. But if you can, the whole thing with that is, like, if you can get him for the right price, and, like, maybe the Nets will feel like they know D'Lo better than other teams across the league do, and obviously, like, a lot of Nets fans, and you and me are kind of down on him, but maybe even if he gets off to a slow start next year, they still have a higher internal expectations about him, and they get him on a really good deal, kind of like the Sixers did with Joel Embiid. And obviously that wasn't due to Embiid's play, it was due to his injury history, but I think the same kind of principle carries through here. And, like, if the Nets feel like they know him better than anyone else, they'll give him that deal. For me personally, I would want to wait and see, but it all depends on what kind of numbers being thrown around. So I know that's kind of a non-answer, but I think there are kind of too many variables there to give you anything definitive on that.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked an answer, but no, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm saying if you can get him at, like, a number you feel, I mean, obviously it's the same thing as anyone.
$15 million a year.
Sure. I would lean. Yeah, I think so. Again, like, if you're in the Nets, you're not, like, I know for all the times we crap on him, like, D'Lo does do stuff passing the basketball, and there are certain, and I mean, obviously, like, what, like, the 27-point quarter this year, and, like, guys can get hot in the league, like, Corey Brewer had a 50-point game, like, maybe I shouldn't take away too much from that, but I think anyone flashing any type of special abilities, like, eventually you have to take a shot on someone, and we've said it, like, the next superstar for this Nets team isn't walking through that door, so if I could get someone with D'Lo's pedigree, who I feel confident in, who I feel like fits my system for $15 million a year, yeah, I would extend him.
All right. The next superstar isn't walking through that door, but they're also not in this team. I can pretty much assuredly say that.
I don't know. It's a tough situation. D'Lo's what? He's 22. Like, I'm not ready. I'm not saying he's gonna, like, I can say with a lot of confidence, I don't think he's gonna be a Hall of Famer. Like, I can't say with a ton of confidence that I think he's never gonna be an All-Star. Like, I honestly, I don't know. Like, I think that trajectory is still possible for him. And, like, and I think
he
someone
could be an All-Star, but he's not, like, it's like, that's like saying, like, Goran Dragic, someone who made an All-Star team this year, is like a superstar.
Yeah, well, and obviously there are levels, but, like, let's put it like this. I would have given Goran Dragic $15 million a year at age 22.
That's fair. Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Yeah, and then like, the other thing.
Wait, age 20? Age 22 season?
I don't think he was as good as D'Lo at the same age, so I think it's a little bit different. But, or at least, like, he wasn't given the same opportunity as D'Lo at the same age to show how good he was. But I'm saying, like, someone, like, who I knew was all going to be on, like, a similar trajectory, then yeah. And, like, and I think, like, Oladipo is, like, another, is obviously, like, he's infinitely more athletic than D'Lo could ever dream to be. But, like, he's a good testament to not giving up on top five picks who show whatever amount of flashes, because this is, I mean, and this is his fifth season, and all of a sudden he transformed from a guy who was really an inconsistent role player to one of the 12 to 14 best players in the NBA. And I don't think that's normal, but I mean, just that possibility is worth a non-max contract. So I tend towards signing him. All right, Josh, I want to, we'll maybe spend a few more minutes on this, but I want to take a quick break and remind everyone to submit questions for the Locked On Nets mailbag. We really appreciate it. I made a post on Twitter. I made a post on Reddit. Wherever you want to throw us a question, that'd be great. So I'll have something to talk about later in the week. Really appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Welcome back into the Locked On Nets podcast. Gavin Shaw, Josh Bass with you. We're going to run through one more quote from those exit interviews, and then we will get into the NBA playoffs a little bit. All right, Kenny Atkinson, last one. He says, we have to find the right personnel to fit the defense we want to play, and part of player development when we're working with a guy, we should address one defensive weakness every day. So we kind of touched on this in part one, talking about how the Nets were kind of arguably the best in the league at forcing what are generally considered to be inefficient shots, but still were only the 25th best defense in the NBA because they were last in the league in forced turnovers and still committed a ton of fouls. So that combination hurt them. Josh, what did you take away from that quote from Atkinson, and what do you see as the right defensive personnel, and do Caris LeVert and Jared Allen fit the mold of what you're looking for on, like, the type of guys the Nets should build the defense around?
Yeah, I think Caris and Jared Allen are pretty good examples of that. I think it's more about, obviously, athletic gifts play a huge part in it, especially when you get to the playoffs, as we're seeing now, that just to have guys that have the physical tools to shut down elite players. But you also need guys that are going to try pretty hard throughout the course of an 82-game season, which is not easy. So I think of a guy like Jeremy Lin, who's a decent athlete. He's pretty quick and moves his feet well and good size for a point guard, but he also tries really hard. Like, when he gets screened, he's going to come back in the play and try to contest a shot. And he's a really valuable player to have on defense because he does play with that fervor and intensity, and in addition to having a decent physical tool. So I think those are the guys you're going to need to look at, especially considering you're not going to have a high-end draft pick. You're going to have to find these bargains. And I think just kind of getting guys that will really commit to the defensive end to earn their keep is something that they should be looking for.
Yeah, I thought this is a little bit of a tangent, but I think in retrospect that was kind of an underrated part of Jeremy Lin going down, because not that, like, he's like a Drew Holiday or a Patrick Beverley defensively, but the downgrade from him to D'Angelo Russell, and obviously Russell would have been playing pretty significant minutes regardless, but the downgrade at that point guard spot, which you could argue, like, outside of a rim protector, is like one of the more important defensive positions in the league. Like, that's so significant. And I think you, that end, it probably made a bigger difference than losing Lin's offense.
I mean, I think the effect that a point guard's going to have on offense is so much more than on defense.
Yeah, maybe. All right. I guess maybe that's over.
Dominating this game right now. But I think Spencer Dinwiddie is not a bad defender. Like, definitely his effort kind of wanes, but he is, because he's such a big point guard, he's able to really switch on to other guys and just do a great job contesting with his length. So I feel like he's, I don't know, I didn't think Dinwiddie's defense was that bad.
Yeah, no, I mean, and Dinwiddie definitely had his moments. Like, I would say, like, Lynn's probably a little bit more consistent on defense, and it'll be interesting to see if maybe that skill set of just being big and being decent enough because of it can translate to D'Lo at all. Because to me, like, I mean, like, obviously, like, he was the biggest issue there, and he was the guy who would just die on pick and roll after pick and roll. And I think we saw it especially after he came back from injury, and, like, teams had seen enough video of him as a Net. Like, they would just, like, at the end of games, like, if he was on the floor, like, it was like an automatic loss for the Nets, because teams could put him in a pick and roll and essentially get an open layup or an open three, like, every single possession. So to me, like, and Atkinson talks about, like, adding one defensive skill every game, that is probably the biggest variable for the Nets offseason, whether or not D'Lo can really figure things out on the defensive. And not to be good, because I think that's out of the picture, but just to not be horrible.
Yeah, no, I think that's a big part of, like, if you're an elite offensive player, which he's going to need to prove that he can be, but if you're an elite offensive player, as long as you're just, like, not a complete sieve on defense, you'll be fine.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. All right, let's take one more break to remind everyone to subscribe and review the Locked On Nets podcast. We like 5 stars. 4 stars is pretty good. 3 stars, it feels like you're just being annoying if you give 3 stars. I can't even imagine the type of human being that would take the time to leave a 3-star review on iTunes. But you don't really care at that point. You're not passionate about it. If you really give a crap, you'll give us a 1 or a 2. But we'd strongly prefer a 4 or 5. All right, really appreciate it. Back to the podcast. Welcome back in to the Locked On Nets podcast one final time. This is the 2-parter. If you missed part one, it should have gone up on your feed yesterday morning. Or if not, something went terribly wrong. Me and Josh are probably both dead, so don't really count on the podcast coming back. But if it's up there, just remember to check out part one in case you missed it. We talked about some of the best quotes, I should say, from Sean Marks in his final interview of the regular season, and Josh's thoughts on the end of the Nets season, since you guys didn't get to hear those yet. And I know how much you value Josh. Sometimes I feel like it's more than me, and I get a little hurt. Anyways, we will continue with the Locked On Nets podcast, talking about not the Nets, because they didn't make the playoffs. Let's get into it, Josh. NBA playoffs. You and me sat down yesterday. We watched a couple games, a little Thunder Jazz action, a little Cavs Pacers action. So we watched those games. And Josh, only 3 days in now, but what are your biggest takeaways from the playoffs so far?
Yeah, I think that it was an entertaining first round, which is kind of surprising when you just look at the scores, because I think like 6 of the 8 games were complete blow, or 5 of the 8 games were complete blowouts, but it was still an entertaining first round. I think a lot of the matchups are really good. I'm really excited about OKC and Utah. We were able to watch that game together, and even your company wasn't able to ruin it for me, because it was such a good game.
Yeah, no, that was really fun. And I know, like, the Thunder started pulling away late, but to me it was really, really exhilarating to see Paul George go off like that, 8 for 11 from 3, because it felt like we got Kevin Durant and Russ back together. And like, I don't know if PG can like maintain that level for the playoffs, or playoff P, I should probably call him playoff PP maybe even. But I don't know. That got me like really hyped. He's like, I never thought I'd get to see Russ play with someone that good again. And like, low key, like, Paul George is like a pretty incredible like playoff track record. Like, he really does elevate in his game in kind of a unique way, because even with superstars, like, generally these guys get worse in the postseason, because everyone gets worse in the postseason. So I love playoff P, and I'm excited to see what that Thunder team can do. My one regret, and Josh, you're more of a Warriors lover than me, so I don't know if you feel the same way, but I really wish one of these two teams had gotten the Warriors, if either in round one, or at least were lined up to play them in round two, because I think like both present a lot of matchup problems for the Warriors. I mean, the Jazz particularly do when Steph Curry's out, because then you can't really play Gobert off the floor. But I'm kind of upset that's not going to happen. And there's like obviously like a pretty solid chance like OKC might end up like hitting on new high, but still not getting a chance at Golden State just because Houston takes them out in round two.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I would have loved to see a Utah Warriors matchup, but I don't know. I feel like in retrospect, the Warriors did such a good job last year of just playing Gobert. Well, I guess Gobert was kind of banged up the whole series because he had that injury against the Clippers, and that was when Joe Johnson just took over. But I feel like they're not a great matchup, and I think the matchup.
It was Steph. Like Steph was the reason for that. It was because like he kept getting like pulled out like further and further in pick and rolls. Like without Steph, like that was kind of like my whole thing. Like I think that's why like the Jazz have played them so well like this year.
Yeah, that's like Westbrook and Gobert is like the perfect matchup because it's like the guard that is the most athletic player in the league that can just go up against anyone against Gobert, who's just a freak, a giant who is so good at understanding the angles and contesting shots.
Yeah, no, it is intriguing, and I think I know that first game ended up being kind of a dud at the end, but as long as Donovan Mitchell, who can we give him a shout out, 27-11 in his first career playoff game and didn't even play like the last like 7 minutes, like he's like legitimately like amazing. But I think anyways, my long term point is I think that's going to be a really good series. Rockets T-Wolves, a shout out to Derrick Rose for playing well. That is all. Pacers Cavs, like I like 10% thought this could happen, but I didn't share that anywhere, so I guess no one has to believe me on that, but I don't know. Do you think the Cavs are in real trouble, or you don't really buy it?
I think they are in real trouble because Indiana is one of the few teams that has a ton of firepower to match up with them, and I feel like even though they don't have anyone that can really stop LeBron, and no one can, they have a couple guys that can do a decent job. I mean, Lance, Thaddeus Young, Bogdanovich, even though he's super slow, he's at least big and can kind of deter LeBron until the help gets there. I feel like they have a lot of guys, and obviously they're going to need Oladipo to just carry them offensively, but I think the combination of Miles Turner and Sabonis inside will give them a nice punch and can kind of definitely do a lot of damage against Cleveland's front line, which is obviously in turmoil with Tristan Thompson and what's going on with him, and Larry Nance and Love aren't exactly defensive stalwarts.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And again, and the flip side of that is Cleveland has absolutely no one who can even think about guarding Victor Oladipo, and that's a really scary proposition for them. And one final point in this series, I think LeBron looked like a little tired to me in that game. Like I think to some degree it's going to come back to bite Cleveland that LeBron had to play 82 games and had to play like I think he ended up leading the league in minutes per game. Like the guy's the biggest freak in NBA history, maybe the biggest freak in the history of sports. But year 15, that kind of workload after making the NBA Finals 7 times in a row, it's going to catch up with any human being, and I think we might, if Indiana pulls off this series, it'll be 10% because of that, because LeBron at his best, like as good as Indiana is, should be able to win this on his own. So
start calling LeBron the Akron freak or the American freak to compliment Giannis.
Yeah. Don't let Greece get an edge on us. I'm with you. I think I'd love it if Trump tweeted out something about that than just being his xenophobic self. But we're not into politics on this show. Those were kind of the major takeaways out of the playoffs. Shout out to the Sixers for an amazing game one, even though they're losing tonight. Shout out to the Raptors for not choking away game one. Shout out to the Warriors for showing how mediocre the Spurs are, which I think we've both been on that bandwagon for most of the year. And shout out to the Pelicans for winning a game one by 2 points, even though every single thing went their way. Okay, that's it for the NBA portion of this. Josh, you want to talk Jersey Shore for 2 minutes? Or you want to let people have a little build up for that?
We'll do a little Jersey Day. What's going on?
Okay, well, I haven't seen the second episode yet, but you gave me some pretty tasty spoilers on that. And I wanted to do this segment to honor the Nets' Jersey roots. Like, I don't know if like the average Net fan was GTLing in the early 2000s when the Nets were making those title runs, but I still think there's a little bit of a cultural association there. So I wanted to just like have you, because I know you love the show. I love the show, maybe not quite to the same manic degree, but I do really enjoy it. I wanted you to give some thoughts that you had on the reunion and how it's affected your life, having them back in it.
You know what? It's really giving me a lot of positive value. Very high PR on Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
I was cautiously excited for it coming in. I thought I would kind of get sick of it after the first hour, but through 3 hours of the show, it's actually been surprisingly good. They're going back with the drama, the drinking, and I feel like the shenanigans are just as fun as ever. It's something where I thought they were going to really overdo it, and it's kind of been pretty tame, but it's always good to hear things like GTL and burgers for the boys and all the good Pauly D sayings. And I'm sure that like after these 7 or 8 episodes, I don't need to see them ever again, but it's good to have them back.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. And I kind of feel bad because, like, not, like, obviously, like, I mean, it's all, like, to some degree or another, like, these people have found stability in their lives, like, particularly, even though the situation is probably headed to a 5 to 10 year prison sentence, it seems like he's doing better than ever. And I feel bad, like, you're, like, dragging all these people back, like, towards, like, their worst instincts and, like, their worst temptations. Like, you saw, like, in the first episode, like Vinny was like, not that like he came like close to cheating on his girlfriend, but he was kind of tempted to. Ron, like I haven't watched episode 2 yet. He probably has cheated on his girlfriend already. If not, it seems like it's very much.
That's the next episode.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It seems like it's very much headed in that direction. Whatchamacallit, the situation. Like I can't believe he's going to go through this whole season without drinking. Like I'm rooting for him. I really hope he does. It seems unlikely. Snooki, you said she had to like ask people to keep Vinny away from her. So I don't know. I feel kind of bad for what's happening to these people, but I'm also with you that I love having them back in my life. All right. That's a great place to wrap up. Josh, thank you so much for sitting down for this mega pod with me again. Part 1, dropped yesterday. So if you missed that, please, go back, make sure you listen to it because we had some good stuff on Josh's thoughts on the season and, some of the best stuff from Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson in their respective exit interviews. And then we hope you enjoyed this part 2. We'll be back later in the week with a mailbag. Peace out.